The Many Roads to Japan, A Search for Identity, by Robert W. Norris. Chapter 5. John spent 3 more months bumming around Europe. From Athens, he hitchhiked his way through the pastoral Yugoslavian countryside, the alpine meadows, forests, and mountain peaks of Austria, and the deep green of southern France before heading to Spain, as Creta had recommended. He traveled about Spain for 3 weeks on anachronistic trains. From the train windows he could see everything with a casual air: dusty red plains, dark mountains in the distance, olive trees and chestnut woods on high hills, green country with slow-moving rivers, empty spaces and crumbling villages. He took up residence for a week in a room in Seville. From there it was on to Madrid to see the Prado Museum. He spent an entire day there studying the paintings of El Greco, Velasquez, and Goya. Bosch's Garden of Earthly Delights held him in complete awe. He felt a kinship with Bosch's madness, with his distorted perception of the world, his hallucinogenic portrayal of life and its absurdity. In John's ignorance of the world of art, he had not dreamed the insanity of man could be portrayed with such power of sinister hallucination. He resolved that if he could ever learn to express himself in some medium, the picture of man he eventually portrayed would contain many parallels to the grotesque perception of Bosch. His money was nearly spent. He boarded a train to Paris, where he confirmed his reservations on a Luxembourg Airlines plane back to New York. He hitchhiked to Luxembourg and spent his last night sleeping in a wooded field an hour from the airport. A day later, the plane descended upon the runway of John F. Kennedy Airport. The European experiences and revelations in the entire dream ambience of that portion of his life were gone. It was as if he had awakened from a long, undisturbed sleep to find himself groping with reality again. After passing through customs, he took a bus from the airport to downtown Manhattan. It was the middle of summer, hot and muggy, and sweat poured off him. The harsh sounds of jackhammers, hydraulic equipment, and car horns blasted his ears. The smells of soot, garbage, and pollution burned his nose. He bought another bus ticket to New Jersey to escape the congestion. It was near sundown when he got off the bus. He found a place to camp on the outskirts of some town. Early the next morning, he packed and ate a breakfast of oranges and cheese. He checked his wallet. He had $22 left. Then he walked to an on-ramp leading to Highway 80, the great road west. 2 rides took him into Pennsylvania. Then he hit the jackpot. A Navy man being transferred from the East Coast to the West Coast swooped him off the long stretch of highway. They breezed through the thick green of Pennsylvania. Then it was on into Ohio. Halfway across the state, they stopped for a night's rest. With an early start the next morning, they plowed straight through Ohio and Indiana into Illinois and Iowa, then across the Mississippi River westward to Nebraska, through dusty corn and wheat fields, then into the plains of Wyoming as far as Cheyenne. It was a long day, the summer sun spilling waves of heat on the road. A steady haze lay constantly before them until nightfall. They pulled over by a truck stop to sleep. In the morning, it was out of Wyoming into the Wasatch Mountains of Utah. In Salt Lake City, they parted company, the Navy man heading south and John west. A Mormon student gave John a ride 50 miles into the desert before his car developed a radiator leak and the engine overheated. The driver disappeared to the other side of the road to hitch back to Salt Lake City. John began to walk. Soon he was in the middle of a straight stretch where he could be seen from a long way off. He set his backpack down and waited. A white sea of salt surrounded him. The road ran straight as far as he could see until it narrowed into a cloud of heat rising into the distance. The afternoon sun beat down on his shoulders. A strong wind sent tumbleweeds rolling at great speeds. particles of sand lashed at his body and penetrated his eyes. He stood for what seemed an eternity with only an occasional freight truck rumbling by. Finally, a family in a pickup truck stopped and gave him a ride as far as Wendover on the Utah-Nevada state line. Shortly after sunset, a station wagon on its way to San Francisco stopped. John slept in the back, waking to the sight of the Oakland Bay Bridge. By late afternoon, three more rides had taken him to Arcata. He was back where he had started. He believed he had set a hitchhiking record, from the East Coast to the West Coast in 4 days. He had only about $15 left, but he knew he would find a job soon and make it through the initial tough month or so it would take to get his feet back on the ground. The journey had provided the answer to what he had sought. It had all started at his court-martial when the single sentence he had uttered in response to his order to fight in the Vietnam War had saved 4.5 years of his life and instilled in him an awareness of the power of language. His experiences in Europe had reinforced that awareness and stimulated a need to express himself. He now had a purpose. He would become a writer. He would begin his studies and learn the craft. Through the writing, he would get rid of all the confusion and derangement the world had caused in him. In return, he would give back to the world something good and meaningful, the story of a symbolic life. John found a job as a janitor in an elementary school in Orrick, a town of 800 people on the California coast about 50 miles north of Arcata. He rented a small room near the school and started training to be a writer. He was practically illiterate. He had no idea what the fundamentals of grammar were or what comprised good literature. The job required that he work only 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. He often took strolls along the isolated stretch of beach south of Orrick, along the riverbank of the Mad River, and on the logging roads that led into the redwood forest that skirted the town's eastern flank. Most of his free time, however, was spent reading all the books he could, copying down sentences and descriptions that appealed to him, and recording in a notebook his journey across the U.S. and Europe. It was a lonely time. Near the beginning of December, when the winter rains started, he decided to quit his job, return to Arcata, and go back to school. He found another job at a small redwood lath mill in Arcata. In March, he was accepted into Humboldt State University and entered the journalism department. His boss at the lath mill agreed to let John work part-time in the mornings to accommodate his schedule of afternoon classes. He also began playing amateur basketball again. The next 2 years were like a return to innocence. All that existed for John was basketball and study. There was even a return to normalcy in his family relationship. His father was retired and occupied with building a new house. He had converted to the Seventh-day Adventist faith, and with it came a greater acceptance of John's refusal to fight in Vietnam. He even offered to give some financial help for John's schooling. John bypassed all the required general education courses to concentrate on writing and literature classes. Two of his classes required the students to do actual field work and turn in stories to the local newspaper every week. When 5 of his stories were accepted and printed with his own byline, John felt that particular joy every writer craves, seeing his name in print. After nearly 2 years of study, John felt it was time to get serious about writing fiction. It was time for him to once again make a break from Humboldt County and find his way in the world. He had gotten as much as he could out of his studies at the university. He packed his belongings, a few changes of clothes and 2 boxes of books, into his car and moved to Los Angeles. He found a small apartment and a job working as a bookkeeper in the main office of a shipping company. In the evenings and on weekends, he began spending hours at the typewriter, working on short stories that became increasingly longer as he looked ahead to being able to write a novel. He was like a marathon runner in training, starting out with short sprints and working gradually into longer and longer endurance runs. Sometimes he worked on character sketches, sometimes on place descriptions. At other times, he practiced stylistic devices such as alliterative writing, stream of consciousness narrative, understatement in the Hemingway tradition, and metaphorical comparisons. The truth was, he had no style of his own. He was in a stage of imitating every writer he fell in love with, only to abandon him or her shortly and copy the style of the next writer who struck his fancy. Of all the writers John was frantically trying to study, Henry Miller appealed to him the most. Miller's intoxication with language, his free spirit, his exaltation of life as seen from the gutter, his unbounded ego, his faith and sense of humor, and love of the cranks and artists who inhabited his world, all stirred in John deep emotions concerning the life he had chosen to pursue. Miller instilled in John a belief in the divine guidance of the artist. Miller made John want to be a writer, to plunge into the depths of human experience. Nearly a year passed. He began making preparations for returning to Europe. Still under the influence of Henry Miller, he had decided it would be impossible to write in the U.S. He believed if he was to experience the true artist's life, he had to live and work where the artist and his work were appreciated and encouraged, not in a country like the U.S., where the artist was repressed into a life of conformity and commercialism at best. John would return to Paris to play the role of the starving young artist, to recapture the past, in particular the events of that journey he had taken 4 years earlier in search of an identity and a direction in life. He was finally ready to begin his novel, to become a writer. On January 11, 1977, John boarded a plane to Paris, not knowing what his future held, but filled with confidence and a faith that there was meaning in everything he had experienced and everything that would come.